welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
Today's episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast. Craig and I have a very special guest here today. Derek Reimer has joined us from Drip. Drip is lightweight marketing automation software that doesn't suck by their own tagline. They are a tool that competes with the likes of MailChimp and Infusionsoft. And Derek's going to regale us with some tales of how he actually built this with his co-founder, Rob Walling. Welcome, Derek.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So, Derek, tell me a little bit about how you first met Rob and got involved with Drip, because that's a pretty huge project.
Yeah. So I met Rob about, it was sometime in 2011, I believe. I was in a local startup competition called 59 Days of Code. The goal of that competition was to build an application prototype from zero to a working prototype in the span of 59 days. Rob was a judge in that competition and I was a competitor. So that's how we first met.
Cool, cool. And how did that, obviously after that, he didn't just go, oh, I just found my technical co-founder right there, I'm done. It didn't happen like that. So how did you get involved with Drip?
So I won the competition that year and Rob kind of noticed that I was doing similar things to what he had been talking about through the academy and as a micropreneur, you know, and I had been kind of following his blog. I read his book and all that. So that was kind of my trajectory. And so we can continue to meet up, Rob and I and another friend of ours in the Fresno area, continued to meet up on a regular basis after that and stayed in touch. It was about maybe a year or so after we had been meeting up. I was kind of looking for my next step, and I was considering going into doing some consulting or looking for work in the software industry. And it was around that time that Rob had Hittail. He had acquired it probably about 6 months before and was looking for somebody to come on as a product manager for that. So yeah, we already had a personal relationship, and then that's when it kind of came together for us to start working together.
Okay. So what was your development experience before you started working on Hittail and Drip? Specifically, how much Rails work had you done and on what kinds of projects?
So I'm a self-taught developer. I've been writing code since I was probably about 8 years old. And so it had always been a hobby of mine, and it wasn't until I got into college, started college around 2006, that I was kind of getting more and more interested in doing software development professionally, and I was building websites for people and just kind of doing little web design projects here and there, and then I started getting interested in more intense, you know, server-side frameworks and things like that. So I probably got into Rails maybe about 5 years ago, and started out building my own apps. I was kind of one of the followers of 37 Signals. I was drinking their Kool-Aid and just really interested in building a SaaS app. I felt very inspired by them. So Rails was kind of a natural choice for that because I was following 37 Signals, and as soon as I started working with Ruby, I just kind of fell in love with the language. Yeah, my first couple of projects didn't really... They weren't really successes, but they were great learning experiences. One was an app for building documentation, and another was an app that interacted with the Twitter API and helped you find potential leads on Twitter. So, just kind of got my start trying to build apps, SaaS apps, and learn the ropes.
So, you know, a lot of us followed along with Rob on via the podcast of kind of the development experience for Drip, and you know, there were a lot of parts to it that kind of evolved. What was the toughest thing for you in building Drip?
Probably dealing with the amount of data that we take in, and that and sending large broadcast emails are probably the biggest technical challenges that we've had to overcome. So Drip is not sure how familiar your audience is with Drip, but we take in a lot of analytics data. So every customer that signs up for Drip, we ask them to install our JavaScript snippet on their website. And that allows us to, you know, record when someone first visits their website and where they came from. And then they can fire any arbitrary number of events based on the actions they're taking, like viewing their pricing page or viewing a tour page. So you can imagine each of those is a hit to our web servers and an insert into our database. And the load quickly stacks up. So, you know, we figured out early on that even with just a handful of customers in, like, our database was getting quite large. Queries that used to run fast when the database was small were starting to run slowly, and we had to, you know, consult with the DBA and just start optimizing things. And that happened a lot earlier than we would have liked, you know. But it's just kind of a nature of the app.
Well, like, how soon did you have to start doing that?
I would say in the first, probably the first 3 or 4 months of having some real customers in, we hit database issues. It's kind of, yeah, if you've listened to the Startup Stories podcast, I think it's kind of chronicled there where, you know, we had some intense nights of database issues and having to move from one platform to another. And database has been caused quite a few headaches for us.
Yeah, so we were going to mention the podcast. I think it was a great, like you said, chronicling of the development history with you and Rob along the way. And there was a lot of pivots that you guys took. I know it started off as almost like a plug-in type scope, and now it's a full-fledged email marketing automation tool for businesses. But, you know, what was it like to have so much transformation and kind of the scope and the focus of the app over time? Was that tough, or was that kind of an enjoyable evolution?
I would say both. It was pretty stressful. you know, when we started out, we were envisioning Drip as a great way to capture emails and to send follow-up sequences. It was a really simple idea. And it was something that we felt the existing platforms weren't executing on very well. You know, like just to put together an email course in MailChimp, for example, seemed, you know, needlessly painful. And we had built this little opt-in widget that is now kind of one of the key parts of Drip. We had built a rough manual version of that and installed it on Hittail, which is one of the other products that we work with. And so it was those two main components. It was after we got our first few users in that we started to realize that, you know, people were asking for a lot more. And, you know, we originally were kind of resistant to it because we wanted to stick with our core vision. But it kind of became clear that, you know, what is now our marketing automation features, people were just desperately in need of those. So, I mean, it was painful at the time, especially having to change our data model after the fact. That's always painful when you have production data and customers in the app. I think in hindsight, it was pretty critical to our success.
So, speaking of success here and your choices of technology, Drip is obviously built in Rails, and you're a Rails guy. Do you feel like Rails was a good tech choice for Drip, and would you do it differently the next time if you were in a similar bootstrapping situation?
Yeah, I totally feel like it was the right choice, partly because it was what I was really comfortable with, and I think that's the key thing for anybody who's trying to bootstrap something themselves is, you know, don't go out and pick a technology that you're not really comfortable with to begin with. So I think for that reason, it was, you know, it could have been anything, but since I was deep into Rails, it was absolutely the right choice. And, you know, every platform has its challenges. I think it's definitely the right choice. And also in terms of our hosting, we are hosted on Amazon Web Services on our own VMs. Probably if I was bootstrapping something from the start, I would move more towards a platform as a service type setup like Heroku, because, you know, managing server patches and all those things is not something you necessarily want to be doing while trying to build a product and market it. You know, for Drip, because we have so many interesting scaling issues, I mean, I feel like we kind of have to be on the more bare metal platform that we're on right now.
So, you know, talking about technology choices and kind of your approach to something like Amazon Web Services for hosting, What, in general, what kind of advice would you give to people who are just starting out bootstrapping an app that could scale to the level of Drip? I mean, I think you guys have faced some of the real challenges of scaling an app as a bootstrap company early on. What have you learned along the way?
We definitely learned that at the scale that we're at, I don't feel like the platform as a service, you know, systems out there right now are really suited for handling our needs. I think we are kind of a special case among your typical, you know, small app. If you just have an app that's about, you know, create, read, update, delete the standard CRUD apps, then most likely a platform as a service will be able to handle what you need just fine. We were originally, our database was hosted with Heroku Postgres, which is like a managed database hosting service. And it was good early on because it let us, you know, we didn't have to worry about backups. That was kind of automatically built into the system. We didn't have to worry about patching the server, any of that other stuff that's involved with keeping a database server healthy. But it was going to get pretty expensive pretty fast with the amount of data that we had. And we were running into kind of odd performance issues that were really difficult to diagnose because we weren't able to, you know, SSH into the server and see what was happening. It was just kind of, you know, and that's kind of what comes with a more abstracted system like Heroku. You don't get quite the level of visibility into the system that you get when you can actually log into the server. So yeah, I would say like if we were starting out fresh, I mean, I would start on a platform as a service, and only if you need more power or more control of the system, then kind of move to something more bare metal.
I have a follow-up to that, though. Do you think that, you know, some of the more real-time functionality that something like Node offers will create the need for a more robust platform as a service? Or do you think that, like you said, your app is kind of an outlier and there probably won't be that many that need that kind of capacity?
Yeah, I just kind of doubt that most people's applications are going to need, need that level of control, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Most aren't That's taking fair. In real-time analytics data like Drip is. Yeah. There's a subset of apps out there that do it, but most folks like us who are just bootstrapping apps don't have to deal with those challenges.
I remember Amy Hoy specifically said that they were having some trouble in a very large server bill on Heroku, similar situation to what you guys said, some performance issues, and they had some kernel panics and stuff too, but Heroku in general seemed to generate some issues of their own when they were building their customer support tools.
Yeah, I remember reading about that as well. And I don't remember all the details of it, but I think anytime you're dealing with black boxes where you don't have control, it's scary from someone running an app when you don't know why things are happening that are happening, you know.
High five, fellow control freak.
It's that chaos factor, right? You want to eliminate as many possible causes of chaos as you can.
Right, right. So speaking of things that you use to scale Drip right here, can you tell me some things that you used that you hacked into Drip to get it to scale when you didn't really have the resources to just get anything that you wanted, like barometrics, for example?
Yeah, so, well, that is a good example, I guess, of getting metrics about our users. We have this admin area that's ever growing with all kinds of different metrics and stats that we continually add as needed. Unfortunately, we're not hosted with Stripe subscriptions, so we can't take advantage of someone like Barometrics to get all of our you know, customer analytics. We're always dumping stuff into our admin area trying to get more insights. Yeah, I'm trying to think of other examples.
Can you tell me why that is? Why didn't you start using Stripe subscriptions? Because that's kind of interesting. I mean, everybody these days is like, oh yeah, just use Stripe. And then when you get Stripe on top of that, you can have all these great tools to analyze your stuff and tell about churn and so on and so forth. Why didn't you guys go that route? Seems like an easy thing.
Yeah, you know, well, okay, it was 2.5 years ago. And I think when we were making the decision about whether to build our own billing engine or go with you know, Stripe to handle the recurring billing. So I'm not sure that, I think the system was a little bit less mature back then. And we knew that Drip was gonna need definitely an aspect of metered billing. You know, we have basically an infinite number of plans depending on how many subscribers you have. So we have our published 4 tiers on our website, and then beyond that, it goes up in very specific increments depending on how many subscribers you have. So that was going to be, I don't think Stripe subscriptions is quite, you know, optimal for that type of metered billing. And we do a lot of auto upgrading and auto downgrading based on usage. It's probably possible. And if I had to make the decision again, I would have to take a serious look at it, because with all these analytics providers that have popped up, it seems like definitely a win not to have to build all those queries yourself. You know, we've dedicated definitely some many weeks of developer time just building some of those admin reports. So yeah, that was the main reason, I guess. And, you know, technology was different back when we were making that decision too. So it's hard to compare now.
So speaking of things that you built out, you know, whether you needed to or not, what feature are you most proud of that's in Drip today?
I would say definitely our automation engine, you know, is the one I'm most proud of. Prior to Drip, I had some experience with MailChimp and kind of the list-based approach to email marketing. And I mean, comparing that to the automation engine in Drip is just night and day. And you know, it's awesome to continually see our customers delighted by just what's possible with our automation engine. You know, and we often sit around the office and we'll get, you know, some complex use cases thrown at us in the support channels, you know, people wanting to do all kinds of crazy things, trigger different rules based on actions their users are taking. And it's really fun to just look at our system and figure out a way to accomplish what they need in a pretty elegant way. It's just a super powerful feature that, you know, I'm really proud of.
Yeah, I'll give a personal use case. I mean, I have Drip installed for Podcast Motor, and it is, I'm just using it barely above the functionality of MailChimp right now, but I'm looking into some of the automation rules, and it's just kind of a little daunting, but mind-boggling for sure to say, well, I could do all these things with, you know, you go through my email course, and then you're a customer, and then you're not a customer, but you go through another course, or you buy this, and everybody gets their own little track. It's great for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just the challenges that we had with MailChimp, you know, just not sending the same email to one person multiple times, if you had them on multiple lists, was like crazy difficult to overcome. That was one of our key goals with Drip, is to make all this stuff really seamless. So I feel like the automation engine kind of sits at the core of that.
So Derek, looking back in the 2020 of hindsight here, what would you say is the one thing you wish you could redo in Drip that you just, you look at it today and you're like, oh man, you know, I wish that's something I could fix. It's tough to fix now. It's going to be tough to fix forever. I wish I could just jump in my DeLorean, go back and fix it. What's that one thing?
Well, I would say that one thing, and it's a little bit nuanced, and so I'll try to explain it in the easiest possible way to understand. But basically, let me give a little backstory. We've done a lot of data model refactoring, and it's been super painful. So, you know, early on we had campaigns, which were email sequences, and we linked subscribers directly to campaigns in our data model. And once we started introducing automation, we kind of outgrew that. And so we spent probably a month pulling subscribers apart from campaigns so that a subscriber stands independent of any campaigns and can be on one or many campaigns. And then more recently, we had our opt-in forms also used to be tied directly to an email campaign. So we spent, you know, a good chunk of time just kind of standing still and doing a bunch of data model refactoring to pull opt-in forms apart from campaigns so that they're tied to automation instead of directly to one campaign. And one of the last remaining pieces of that, of the things coupled to campaigns, has been our confirmation emails. So it was probably maybe about a year ago now, we had introduced the concept of somebody wanting to unsubscribe globally from everything you might send them versus unsubscribing from just one email campaign. And kind of as a result of the way we've pulled things apart, there's now two ways to confirm your subscription, and there's two ways to unsubscribe. There's unsubscribing globally, and there's unsubscribing from a campaign. And similarly, there's these campaign confirmation emails and there's global confirmation emails. And that's been something that, you know, if we could roll time all the way back and re-architect that from the ground up, we would have done it differently, but now it's extremely painful to change. So yeah, long answer. We've gone through a lot of iterations of pulling things, you know, redoing things that have been really painful. And I kind of hope we get around to this one too.
Totally understand those decisions always come back to haunt you later.
Yeah. And it's hard. You try to look out as far as you can as you're architecting these things. And it's crazy how many of those decisions you end up, you know, regretting in light of new information, but it's just kind of impossible to foresee it at the time. So.
Sure.
So Derek, going back to like your 59 day challenge, you know, where you first met Rob and then going through something as kind of expansive as Drip, you know, a lot of people that listen to this show and that we like talking to in the Micropreneur Academy and a MicroConf are kind of just trying to get an MVP, kind of an initial app out the door. What have you learned along the way from kind of smaller apps to something much bigger like Drip that you could offer advice to people to say, hey, do these kind of three things and you'll get something out the door in 3 months or something like that, that you might not have known a few years ago?
Well, I mean, I would say definitely do as much validation as you can with early customers before breaking ground on code at all. And that's what Rob did, my co-founder. He, you know, spent a good couple of weeks reaching out to people and getting a number of people, you know, basically buying in and saying, yes, I will, you know, this sounds useful to me and I'll, you know, use it as soon as you have something to show. You know, getting those commitments early on is a key first step in making sure you're not building something that, you know, nobody wants to use. And then, you know, the next thing we did was broke ground on it and put together a whole plan, you know, nailed down the feature set that we wanted to get out in our first release. And we tried to stick to that as closely as possible. So we just popped open a Google spreadsheet and made a rough project plan and kind of put estimates on things and tried to just rein the scope in as much as possible, because it's really easy to, you know, let scope creep happen, especially at the early stages when you're really excited about building this product and
no.
Yeah, right. Everybody,
you can. It's all gotta go in version one.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never done that. Never, not once.
Yeah. No. I think we all have. Yeah. So, and I mean, definitely some of that happened, but having a plan at least written down, and even making we were doing our estimates on features, just really trying to figure out like, how soon can we get this out? And is this feature going to take too long to build? And if it is, then can we cut it out? You know, asking those tough questions continually just to try to get something presentable out the door. Because, you know, a minimum viable product means that it's got to be somewhat viable. So you can't, you know, it has to have enough to provide value, but not so much that you're guessing on things and building things that people may not need. So I think it took... I actually did a little bit of digging before coming on here, and I think we broke ground on code in December of 2012, and we installed it on our own app, Hittail, in April. So we had a basic working prototype. I was part time on Drip, and the other part of the time on Hittail, and so that was a pretty quick turnaround. I feel pretty good about how quickly we were able to use that ourselves. And then it was not long after that we got our customer number one using it, and definitely a good move to get our first customer on, because what we found was we struggled really hard to solve all the problems that our first customer needed, and we just learned a ton from interacting with that first customer and, you know, going back to the drawing board and figuring out how are we going to make this do everything it needs to do in the least amount of time. And, you know, until we got it out in front of customers, we weren't really learning much. So, you know, for us, that's really where the learning began, was getting it in the hands of some folks.
Like they say, no product survives first contact with a customer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that first customer, your audience might know, Ruben Gomez of BidSketch, he kind of pointed to some things that he wanted to be able to do, like, yeah, it'd be great if I could, move someone from one campaign to another, or, you know, and all those little tidbits started coming in. And now looking back, they all kind of were pointing at marketing automation, at our automation engine, but we didn't really have the right words for it. And we didn't know exactly what, you know, what people needed. It was kind of just this disparate collection of little feature requests that ultimately kind of came together as an automation engine. But, you know, without our customers, we wouldn't have known to go down this path. And we definitely resisted it. But after enough banging over the head by customers for these features, we finally gave in and built them.
And probably lucky to have a technical person be customer number one, like Ruben, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's kind of, you know, was the strategy from the beginning, was to, for our first round of customers, go with people who we know. You know, you don't want someone totally anonymous as your first customer. It's good to have some rapport with them prior, and someone who kind of understands how these things work. You know, they're able to look past any minor bugs you might have, or they'll be able to understand limitations of the system if you explain them. You know, that just reduces the friction of having to explain too much, you know, to someone who doesn't have any background as your first customer. And then gradually getting more and more people onboarded who are less familiar with how things work.
Right. And it also helps you figure out what items you're going to have to polish, because they can come back to you and tactfully point out, you know, I was in this dialogue over here and I was clicking through and then all of a sudden it did this, as opposed to, your app's broken, it sucks.
Yep. Totally. Yeah. The support requests we get nowadays, sometimes you just have to laugh at.
Probably along the lines of, your app's broken, it sucks. Yeah. I hear those with the plugin too. And I'm like, well, you know, there's this documentation out here. Anyway, so when you first started building Drip, you know, you guys didn't realize that it was actually a marketing automation tool that you ended up building. And so your original competitors were kind of like the AWebers and MailChimps of the world. And then later on, you know, now you guys are kind of taking on Infusionsoft and Ontraport. So where do you see Drip kind of standing in the field of all your competition at this point?
Well, the current headline on our website kind of sums up, you know, where we're positioning ourselves, and it's lightweight marketing automation. And so
that doesn't suck.
That doesn't suck, right? That's good. So, I mean, the big players, like you mentioned, Infusionsoft, Eloqua, Marketo, you know, these are all enterprise-y type packages, have a high starting price point. A lot of them, you can't even sign up for a trial of the app. You have to, you know, get on the phone with somebody and schedule a demo and pay a big chunk of cash up front. And so these, you know, these are the systems on the top end that we're competing with. Basically, we like to say that we provide about 80% of what they do at a fraction of the cost that they have. And we have a big focus on, you know, keeping our app usable, keeping it user-friendly, and just kind of the anti-enterprise-y app that's better suited for folks like us, you know, just running startups, small to mid-sized businesses. So that's kind of our positioning. We have become less comparable to the traditional email marketing packages like MailChimp and AWeber. Since launching our automation features, we're kind of different in different spaces now. There's still some confusion among folks, you know, looking at MailChimp and saying, well, MailChimp has some automation, and how does Drip compare to that? And so there's a little bit of education to be done, but really the closest competitors we have are kind of the enterprise grade apps out there now.
So Derek, where do you think Drip is going to be, say, 18 months from now?
It's a good question. Obviously still growing, hopefully, and definitely more deeply integrated with the other best-in-class tools out there for marketing, like landing page providers and CRMs, payment providers. We have a very quickly growing list of integrations right now. And that's kind of, you know, one of our key goals here is to build a best-in-class tool and not try to do everything for everybody. So a lot of the apps that we compete with kind of are a, you know, a kitchen sink of different things. You've got your shopping cart and your landing page and your back office and all these different pieces of functionality thrown into one giant application. And we, you know, recognize that we have constraints. We don't want to grow to a really massive team. We just want to do really well at the very specific need that we're solving. So definitely integrating with the best tools out there so that folks can use the best landing page provider to send subscribers into Drip, and we can communicate with other applications on the other end as well. So that and hopefully keeping not growing the app much bigger than it is right now. Really just focusing on polishing our existing features and making them even more useful for folks, and just staying focused, I guess.
So I'd like to follow up with that for just a sec, Derek. At what point did you realize that integrations were going to be a real key element to Drip's growth and health?
That's a good question. Probably, we've definitely had a lot of requests from folks, and especially since we launched our automation engine, it kind of falls into place all the different opportunities to trigger different automation rules inside of Drip. So, for example, if you're selling products on Gumroad, so you have an info product, then it makes total sense to automatically send an event from Gumroad over to Drip to trigger a follow-up sequence after someone makes a purchase. We would get requests like that, and then we would say, okay, who are all the main e-commerce platforms like this for selling digital products? And we're pretty fast now at integrating with a lot of these modern tools. Most of them have webhooks for pinging back and sending us event data. We figure, it's only good can come from integrating with more and more of these platforms and just covering more of our bases. And then with our lead scoring engine, where that basically helps you discover the subscribers that are most likely to become your customers, it was kind of a no-brainer to start integrating with customer relationship management systems like Close.io and Pipedrive and people like that. So I think it just kind of came about organically. It wasn't like one day we suddenly realized that integrations were key, but just more and more requests from customers, and it just kind of, is the right way to go.
Can you talk a little more about lead scoring? It's something I haven't really gotten into in the app, and I will be integrating with a CRM here soon. Can you talk about what's the vision for lead scoring, and what's its best use case?
Sure, you bet. Lead scoring is kind of one of those core tenets of, quote unquote marketing automation. Basically, how it works is we are able to take in various event data about subscribers, about the actions they're taking. So anytime a subscriber opens one of your emails or clicks a link in one of your emails, that has an impact on their lead score. Or anytime they, you can send us events from your website. So anytime they visit your pricing page, that's also meaningful, or visiting a tour page, for example. So all of these things you can configure in your lead scoring settings. And basically anytime subscribers perform these actions, we add a few points to their lead score. And over time, if a subscriber doesn't interact with your emails or your website or anything for a period of time, their lead score will decay a little bit. But then if they come back, it'll go back up. So it just kind of gives you a measure of how engaged that subscriber is and ultimately how likely they are to become a paying customer. For example, you can set up an automation rule to say, when someone's lead score crosses this certain threshold, then, tag them, send them an email, or send them over to my CRM system. And that keeps, the subscribers that are coming into your CRM, maybe for a more high-touch follow-up, keeps that list higher quality.
Nice, nice. I'm going to have to start really working with it. That's next on the list.
Yeah. We just got wrapped up our beta period on that, so now it's generally available.
I'm definitely going to start using that a little bit more. I asked for that to be turned on when it was on the early beta, and I was looking at that, and I'm like, wow, this is really cool. But I'm definitely not leveraging it to that extent at this point. I definitely need to.
Right, yeah.
So, Derek, is there anything else you wanted to talk about with respect to Drip and kind of your development, both technically and kind of professionally, over the course of bringing Drip up to market?
No, I'll just say that it's been a wild ride and, a really fun experience to grow an app of this scale. It's definitely, I'm learning more and more every single day. Thankfully, we've grown organically. So, you know, we've had hit a lot of scaling challenges along the way, but, you know, it's happened gradually enough that we've had the opportunity to go out and learn how to get to the next scaling step and handle the next wave of traffic. And it's a never-ending learning process for sure.
That's kind of the beauty of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. So, Derek, where can folks find out more about you? I know we'll have a link to Drip itself, but where can folks find out more about you?
Probably on Twitter. I'm just my full name, Derek Reimer, on Twitter, so you can keep up with me.
And we'll put that in the show notes.
Awesome.
Sounds good.
Well, thanks so much for being on here with us today, Derek. We appreciate you taking the time. And like Derek said, for anybody who wants to learn more, you can check out at Derek Reimer on Twitter or visit getdrip.com for more information about lightweight marketing automation software that doesn't suck. Thanks for being on the show with us today, Derek.
Thanks, guys.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.